I am fascinated, intrigued, and honored
you
by
may
the
have done what they said you did,
me.
But
they are magnificent.
They
marvelous.
Say you are.
You
need to know that you're okay just
you
the way you are.
The plan
succeeded
matter.
In you as a child.
What you've been through matters.
This podcast is designed for you.
It's
love on
about
a mission
hope.
In a world
about
where
the focus
human experience
is
lacking.
My name is Ginger Wilk, and we're here to talk about that which matters.
Welcome to That Which Matters. I want to tell you how grateful I am to all of you for your attentiveness to these episodes, for the feedback that you've been giving me. I'm so grateful that the impartation has been rich and has been hitting the mark. I found out from my Wrapped by Spotify that the top episode in last season was the rejection monologues. And so thank you for that feedback in really just letting me know that this was something that you really wanted to hear more about, that rejection was a hot topic. And I'm going to definitely be focusing on more things around trauma and around our own internal narrative when we're going through difficult times. So today I want to talk about types of intimacy. So I am borrowing this from a manual that was written by Stephanie Covington, who I've used before. And she's just a tremendous creator of curriculum. And I remember reading this in one of the workbooks that I was presenting, both in a in-prison program and in the community. And when I saw this, I was just stricken by this revelation of this information. And I thought to myself, everybody needs to hear what this really has to say. And I think that, you know, I've talked about relationships before. Obviously, I've been married for, you know, 36 years. I have a lot of, you know, experience in being married and in a relationship. I've had a lot of experience with helping people through their premarital phase and even through crises in their marriages. I work with programs where we talk about relationships. So it's definitely a topic that I'm well aware of and well versed in. But the one thing that I will say is that none of us have any type of education when we first start dating and we first start getting into relationships. We just sort of forge our way into something. We're attracted to a person. We start talking to them. I mean, many times, sometimes it just goes into something that's physical. There's not a lot of thought. There's no courses that we need to take. There are no contracts that we sign. We just find our way into these relationships. And we don't really have a lot of preparation. And let's just be honest. Even people who have been dating for many years or who have been married for many years still feel ill-prepared at times for things that come up. And so I love this worksheet because it talks about what exactly we're looking for when we're going into relationships. We don't think about this when we're 14. We just, you know, we think the guy across the classroom is so gorgeous or the girl that's walking down the hall is so beautiful. Or, you know, we just, you know, our knees are knocking or our palms are sweaty and, you know, we just want to be around them. We don't think about the types of intimacy. We don't think about a blueprint for what we really want. But ultimately, dating is something that should lead to marriage at some point and a committed relationship. It's not something that we just do. It's not something we do to just kind of pass the time along. And I think I've said this before in some of my episodes on relationships that, you know, it's just like going to college. I mean, how foolish would it be if we were to go to college and keep taking courses, keep paying the tuition, keep showing up, keep doing papers, but we never get a college degree. Like we never stick it out until we get that finality of why we attended this college. And so if you're in dating relationships, and most people are, you know, at some point in their lives, eventually it should come to a point where either A, you decide that you're going to be single and you're going to be, you know, content with your singlehood, or you're going to be in a committed relationship. And so what does that look like? What do we really want or need in a committed relationship? And a lot of people can't really give you the answer to that. They can give you a couple of things, but the blueprint is something that we're usually lacking. And so when I say we're going to talk about types of intimacy, the word intimacy is almost often associated with sexuality. It's the first thing we think about is intimacy, sexuality. However, that is only just one part of what intimacy is really all about. It is an important part for sure, but it's just one piece of what intimacy is supposed to be about. And that's where I think a lot of us kind of fall short of being able to understand what fulfillment is going to look like in a relationship. And so one of the really important aspects of intimacy is emotional intimacy. This is where we can be with a person that we love and we can have a sharing of significant thoughts and feelings. This is where we can talk about our dreams. We can talk about the barriers in our lives. We can talk about the struggles that we're having. We can talk about what it was like when we were a child, our family of origin, some of the trauma that we went through, some of our failures early on in our lives, how we've grown, how we've matured, what are some of the things we don't like about ourselves, where we can just have open and honest conversations with one another. And emotional intimacy is so important. And I've found in a lot of relationships when I'm observing them or talking with a couple that many, many times you have the woman that's kind of going to her own friends for those types of things and the man who's not really talking to anybody about those types of things. But really the desire would be for partners in a committed relationship to be able to have that type of sharing with one another. It doesn't mean that you can't have that sharing with friends. You should, and you will. But to be able to have that sharing, that's going to boost the closeness and the bonding between you, that you can have that closeness, you can talk about those things, and you can have transparency with one another. You can have that desired connectivity that was intended for romantic relationships. Another aspect is intellectual intimacy. That's the sharing of world ideas, having mutual respect for intellectual capacities. I often tell people, you know how sometimes there can be a situation where you just see somebody that's just so gorgeous and they're just like walking in and you just can't wait to get to know them and you're just thinking they're the best thing. And then they open up their mouths and they say something that is just so off base or so lacking, not to put them down, but in terms of what you really need intellectually, and you realize, oh my goodness, like the physical is not everything. Like I need to be able to have intelligent conversations with the person that I am in love with, the person that I'm in a relationship with. And that means whatever, it doesn't mean that everybody has to have their doctorate degrees. It just means that there should be a stimulating conversation. You know what it's like when you can have two people in, you know, you might be talking about something in the news and you have different views and maybe it gets a little bit heated, but not heated where you're rude, just heated because it's passionate. Or maybe you're talking about things that are going on in, you know, politics. And, you know, I know that's a touchy subject, but even certain things where you can kind of talk about the different angles, or maybe you're passionate about racial disparity, or maybe you're wanting to talk about history, or something that you have really honed in on in your life that is very, very important to you, a cause or, you know, something. And you want to be able to have a person that you can talk to about those things and that they're not going to just sit there and listen and zone out. They're going to give you that stimulation back and forth like a tennis match. You know, you'll have an idea, they'll have an idea. And before you know it, you know, 3 hours has gone by and it felt like 5 minutes. That's what it should be like when you're in a relationship that has that element to it that is satisfying. And I remember I was talking with a client one time years ago and he had been in a really, really bad relationship and he actually had his doctorate. And it was his relationship really went to a bad extreme. And so we were kind of strategizing like where to go from here. And I noticed that when he would talk about some of the places he would go or the people that he was trying to court, I was like, why haven't you thought about trying to meet somebody who's at your level intellectually, somebody who's at your level educationally? And he just looked at me like a deer caught in headlights because it just never really occurred to him. And the next thing I know, the next time I talked to him, he was dating a pharmacist. So he realized that he had to step up his game. First of all, he had things he had to work on, but he also had to understand that, you know, I need to be with a person. A person needs to be with me where we can have a match in that area where we can be at that same level. And that's important. And a lot of times that's not what we're thinking about when we're going through online dating apps or where we're going out to a club or, you know, looking at somebody across the church or whatever. Like we're thinking more about the physical and we're not thinking about these things. But I will tell you, the physical is something that is going to fade. And I don't mean that somebody becomes ugly. What I mean is that it becomes not as important as some of these other elements. A person's beauty begins to emulate through all these other areas as well as the physical. So I think that's important. Recreational. For sure, you should be able to enjoy being with the person that you're in a committed relationship with. And I will say this, all these things that I'm listing today, you're never going to get all of these with one person. So you are going to get levels of intimacy, like I'm going to describe, with friends, with people that you work with. There's going to be groups of people that you're going to experience things with that you can't necessarily experience with your partner, and that's okay. For instance, with sports, you might have, you know, I've often said, like, if you were on a baseball team or a football team, like, you know, when you were in school, you know, what was it like when you began that team? How did everybody kind of like stay in their corners and maybe not trust one another? And, you know, maybe they were competitive with each other. And then what was it like after a whole season of playing games and being undefeated, or, you know, even going through difficult times? What type of intimacy developed? And I'm sure that you will all remember that the intimacy develops over time to something that becomes very cohesive on a team. You can't necessarily experience that type of closeness with your partner as it pertains to sports, and that's okay. They don't have to do everything with you. You don't have to do everything with them, and you do need to have intimacy, and again, non-sexual intimacy with other people within those contexts. But you should be able to have things that you do together where you share experiences, hobbies, and travel and things like that. It would be fun to be able to, you know, maybe you go, if you go on a date once a month, let's just say you've been married or you've been together for a long period of time and you only really go out like once a month or every other week. Maybe, you know, you each take a turn deciding what you're going to do when you go out. One person decides, okay, we're going to go to the zoo, or we're going to go to the aquarium, or we're going to go to a movie. And then the next time someone, the other partner, gets to decide what to do. And you diversify the experiences that you have with one another to kind of get out of that rut, so that you can develop an intimacy with each other. So there can be so many things that you can do. And I believe that that's an area that a lot of people can grow in as well, because a lot of times people become pretty stale in that area. Work is an example of where many people don't work with their spouses or their partners. So there's forms of intimacy that you can have at work with your other coworkers that you can't necessarily, you can share with your partner to tell them about it, but not experience it with them. So, like, for instance, let's just say there's a project that a whole bunch of people worked on together. Maybe it's contractors that, you know, together stared at this basically bare foundation of a house one day in, you know, May. And by the end of August, they're looking at a full house that was brought up from the foundation all the way to the finishing touches. And they can experience that together, knowing that they work together to create this beautiful thing, or a project that you're working on with coworkers, or being able to help clients out at work if you're in the social service field. You get to experience that level of intimacy of watching people grow together. But your spouse or partner may not be sitting there with you while it's happening, but you can share that with them. You'll never guess what this person said. They came in kicking and screaming. They hated this program, but they walked away being so grateful with tears in their eyes. Like, you know, to be able to experience that growth, with your coworker, number one, but then also to share that with the person that you love is super important. I know a lot of times, like, people that are in, like, law enforcement and EMS, and when you're really exposed to a lot of trauma on a regular basis, a lot of times what happens is because of that trauma that they never really talk through, they tend to stop sharing things with their partners and their spouses. They're trying to kind of save them from the gory details of what happens on the job, but it's actually the opposite of what really needs to be done. I mean, again, they don't need to know every detail and every bloody, gory, you know, fact about what you saw. But to share the experiences of what you walked through and how something affected you, and to bring them into your world a little bit, and you bring them into your world and they bring you into theirs, that's a part of intimacy. Spiritual. Again, you know, spiritually, You know, and I've said this before, that it is important that people are on the same page spiritually with one another in a relationship. I don't think that it's something that is a complete and total deal breaker if there are some differences. It really depends on what they are. I will tell you this, where we are spiritually, where we are with our faith and in religion, doesn't seem like it adds up to a hill of beans when you're dating. But when you're married, all of a sudden it becomes a real important element to your relationship. For instance, you decide, all right, we're going to get married. Now what? Where? Who marries us, right? Is it a rabbi? Is it a pastor? Is it the justice of peace? Is it, you know, a relative? Where do we get married? What type of a ceremony do we have? Do we, you know, read scripture? Do we just read some poetry? Or is it just going to be standard vows? You know, what do we believe that, you know, God has to do with this relationship at all? Is God a part of this? Do we want God to be in this relationship? All of a sudden it becomes big. When you have children, do we baptize them when they're an infant? Do we baptize them when they're an adult and they can agree to it? Do we not baptize them? You know, do they go through, you know, circumcision? Do they go through all sorts of things? All of a sudden, what we thought was a non-issue becomes one. Another way where it's very different is in the face of discussing things like death, right? So when there is, a death in the family, a really significant one, it's really important that you both have similar ideas about what happens after death. Like, do we believe in heaven? Do we believe in the eternal, right? I mean, I know I do. But if somebody doesn't, if they're not assured of that and they just think that that's it, someone dies and that's the end, the mourning is going to look very different from one to the other. One is going to be sad, but celebrating the eternal life of that person, knowing that they will see them again. The other one is going to be devastated because that's really, truly the end. And I'm just using those extremes. There's all sorts of other versions of what people think about in those scenarios, but I will tell you that to have spiritual connectivity is a very powerful thing to have it with a couple. There's been no more powerful ministers that I've ever seen than a husband and wife team that are on the same page. There's something really, really solid and impactful about that. But I do think it's something to think about. I don't think that it is something to be ignored or something that you think you can overcome. You need to talk about it if you're going to be getting into a relationship that's long-term. Creativity. I believe that everybody is creative. I know some people will say, oh no, you know, I don't have a creative bone in my body. You do. You absolutely do. It's just a matter of how. Is it that you, you know, decorate cakes? Is it that, you know, you are able to see, you know, like we talked about with a building, you see a building that's in disarray and bring it up to a beautiful mansion or whatever. Are you creative with writing? Are you creative with stage productions? Are you creative with music? Are you creative with decorating your house? You know, so many different ways. Are you creative with things that you can come up with on the computer? Creativity is in all of us because God is the creator. And so we are made in his image. So that's why I love when I see creativity come out of me. I'm like, oh, that's my dad. You know, that's my heavenly father, like coming out in me. And it's remarkable, you know, and so and it is for all of us. But I do think if we can tap into one another's creativity, we probably are not going to be creative in the same way. Most people aren't. Most people, when they come together in a relationship and it works, there's usually differences in that area. But where you can take your creativity and you can work together, that is something that can bring a lot of joy. Or even just to do creative things together. You know, they have those places like Painting with a Twist, and where you can go and you can bring a little picnic basket or whatever and, you know, bring some drinks or something and you paint a canvas together, or you make pottery, or, you know, there's all sorts of things you could even do at home or whatever, like just a fun date or ways that you can experience, your creativity together and just to get outside of the box, something that's different and new, something even that you can just laugh about if you're both terrible at it. It doesn't really matter. It just matters that you're using that side of the brain, right? And you're activating a part of you that is making you a little vulnerable in front of one another, and it can definitely bring a lot of joy. In crisis, that's another type of intimacy. When we go through crises, together, we experience difficult moments that we have the ability to get to the other side of. We can actually become stronger and better as a couple when we go through crises, or it can destroy us or divide us. But when we go through difficult things, even though in the beginning the tendency might be to like kind of blame one another or point the finger or go into our own corners, we have the ability to get to the other side of the crisis and to be stronger and better than we were before as a couple. So going through difficult things, you know, can be a shining star in our marriage, in our commitment to one another. It's not that we wish to go through difficult things, but as much as we might think that it's going to be a deterrence, it actually is an opportunity for us to come together and to resolve together whatever it might be that comes up. And not only that, as a couple, we're able to then help other people that go through crises because we surmounted whatever it was that came upon us. Same thing with conflict, facing and struggling together with differences. You know, conflict is not a bad thing. It's just the way that we resolve it. We are absolutely going to have conflict in relationships. If you say that you're not having any conflict, then you're either A, lying, or B, you are not really, somebody is not really bringing their true views to the table about situations. And that's a very actually toxic type of dynamic. It may not be toxic in the beginning, but it becomes toxic because of the fact that one person is not being their true selves. The other one is buzzing along as if everything is fine, and their partner is kind of minimizing things that are important to them and not bringing them to the table. And so conflict is something actually like those clashes can become an opportunity for us to get stronger, even if it means arguing and, you know, having some, you know, kind of passionate conversations. It's okay, because if we resolve it in a healthy manner, we're going to be better. Also communication. Intimacy comes with communication. That's why, like, you know, there's couples that sometimes they're like, oh, you know, we never have anything physical. We never have sex. We never have this. And when you take a look at the emotional intimacy, when you take a look at their communication, you can understand why, because you're not just going to be in a situation where you just jump into this physical act with one another. You have to come in close in other ways. And communicating is just that, communicating anything, all we talked about, but also, you know, what's going on during the day, what type of a mood that you're in, what you're feeling, what you're afraid of, what happened the day before, you know, what do we still need to resolve? You know, what's going on with the extended family? What's going on with the children? What is God speaking to you? Keeping those lines of communication going on a regular basis. And if you communicate well, then you're going to connect, you're going to connect, you're going to connect, you're going to connect. And therefore that intimacy is going to follow. Another thing is obviously commitment. Commitment is not just about, all right, I'm here and I've just got to stay. You know, being in love and being in a relationship and being married, it's a commitment every single day. You know, there's times when you're going to want to run away, you know, go and buy a gallon of milk and never come home again. There's going to be times when you just think it's way too hard. There's times when it's going to be dark and difficult and, you know, you're not going to feel so like beautiful about every single moment, but commitment is something that you, every single day you make it again. And you realize that you get past it. I know that there's been times when people have been hurt, you know, when a partner might say, you know, I don't love you anymore, or whatever. And that's a big hit to hear that I don't love you anymore. But really what it means is, I don't have those ushy-gushy feelings of love at this moment. And I will tell you that that passes. So it's not a deal breaker. It just means that those emotions are not there. Intimacy doesn't come through emotions. There can be emotions, but many, many times it takes some work to go along with it. And the last one has to do with sharing experiences of beauty, art, music, theater, dance, you know, to always experience things that are going to bring you to a place where you can see beauty. You know, you be in nature with one another, to see beautiful animals, you know, to go and experience theater, to see a movie that's inspirational, like to make sure that you allow yourselves to be exposed to things that are going to get you out of the day-to-day hustle and bustle and just bring you into a world that you'll experience together to heighten your experiences. And so I want to let you know that all these things, like I said, one person's not going to be able to offer all of that to you. You're not going to be able to offer all of that to them. But the person that you're with and the person you decide to be with, you should check most of these boxes. I would say there's probably like 12 here. You know, I would say 8 should be checked out of these things that you have with the person that you're with. And if not, then you either maybe need to do a little bit of work on this, or if you're not already in a committed relationship with them, you might want to rethink it. And you might want to really look for that blueprint that is going to be the best for you and for that person. So I just want to tell you, relationships are beautiful, and they can be God-ordained. You know, what God puts together, let no man separate. You know, a lot of people come together without God putting them together. But what God puts together, let no man separate. So God will be there to fight for you. If truly this is the relationship that God has put his stamp on. And so I just want to encourage you in these relationships. I want them to be rich. I want them, and even if you're single right now, I want you to look for a rich experience when you are ready to be in a relationship, because you deserve it. And I thank you so much for listening and honing in on all of this. And I just pray that you have a blessed set of interactions with the person that you love. Thank you.
In collaboration with IML Productions, this has been your host, Ginger Wilk, with That Which Matters. Thank you for listening.